The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Good morning. Happy Wheels Up Wednesday, September, make that November 13th. Got to work these glasses a little bit better. November 13th, 2024. A slightly rainy 50. It was raining a little heavier a bit earlier on this morning. And it's going to be a rainy, kind of windy, blustery day for the next couple of days. Clears up a little bit, but then is definitely turning colder by this weekend. And possibility of snow in the higher hills, you know, 4,000-foot pass level kind of thing, could actually be happening. So that's what it's looking like this morning. Hope you're doing well. And even though the temperatures are going to be cooling around here in Southern Oregon, inflation ticking up a little bit. They just made the announcement just a few minutes ago. Consumer price index rose 2.6% in the year through October. The report was in line with what economists had expected. You know, always about that's okay, little sheeple. You're looking at your hospital bills and your medical bills, and you're wondering how you're going to pay them. You're looking at the power bill from Pacific Power, which has gone up, and they want to take it up another 15, 16, 17%, you know, for next year. And gasoline's looking kind of semi-okay compared to maybe a few months ago. So that's not the worst thing. But then there's your trip to the grocery store. Did you buy any protein other than perhaps bug butter? Your bug, yeah, that's the World Economics Forum brand, right? Yeah, here's some bug butter, you know, in your climate-friendly, equitable community stack and pack in Medford. But if you actually buy any protein, that's it. You can buy all the cheap, greasy carbs, and those are still reasonably expensive. You know, the junk food, the junk carbs, those are fine. You actually want some good protein. That's the expensive part. So if you actually do that, and instead of going with the government's ridiculous food pyramid, which says eat tons of greasy carbs and junky stuff, then you would notice that the inflation is still more than 2.6%. Oh, my gosh. It is just it's laughable every time you see the federal government talk about what inflation is. And, of course, there's a good reason for this, because they're terrified that if they actually talked about what inflation was, if they went to shadow stats, shadowstats.com, which calculates inflation the way it used to be done before they started saying, oh, this stuff's going up too high, so we're going to take it out of the inflation. Oh, energy, this is too volatile or going up high. We don't want to put that in there. We have Williams over at ShadowStats still talking about inflation, I think 10%. So what he's saying is the real inflation for most people in the real world. And, of course, that drove a lot of the election this year. But they're still trying to get you to believe the big lie. That's the way government is. And, of course, they'd be really terrified. Now, you could imagine what would happen, though, if they had to tell the senior citizens that, inflation's really 10%, so we're going to increase Social Security 10%. And then what happens then with the U.S. dollar? And the budget is busted. You know, that kind of thing. So there we go, 2.6%. You know what the real rate of inflation is if you're a real person. All right, so enough about that. We'll set that aside here at the moment. Now then, the Medford guy, William Frombach Jr., he's the one that's accused of the shootings, Central Point, Friday, made his appearance in Jackson County Circuit Court yesterday. Second-degree murder, attempted second-degree murder, first-degree assault, aggravated first-degree animal abuse, felon in possession of a firearm. Wait a minute. Felon in possession of a firearm? I thought all the gun laws kept the dirtbags from having firearms. How could this be? But yeah, he's accused in the November 8th shooting death of 42-year-old Devery Allen Bynum, a 42-year-old, and of shooting Elizabeth Hadley. Talked about her yesterday. She's still in the hospital, intensive care. And last time I checked, her GoFundMe is at $43,000. It's probably more by this time. 22-year-old in the wrong place at the wrong time. It's just one of the saddest things. And Deputy District Attorney Alyssa Claseman filed the order signed by he's prosecuting that case. She's going to be prosecuting that case. And Rogue Valley Times reporting Judge Pro Tem Paul Moser ordering that Frombach be held in jail without bail, no early release. He didn't enter a plea, didn't talk at all. at this point. Now, I was wondering about this aggravated animal abuse. I guess accuses him of seriously injuring a dog by using a firearm. It must have been part of that little mini Central Point crime spree this morning. Okay. Bynum report shot 7:26 Friday at his home, 300 block of South 4th Street at Central Point in Hadley. 2020 Crater High graduate shot 5 minutes later on her way to work. I mean, who gets up in the morning thinking you're going to be, you know, going to work in Central Point, nice little town, and then dirtbag swoops in, stage left. Just very, very sad. They were mentioning here in this Rogue Valley Times story, I thought it was interesting that the GoFundMe by Bynum's family, the man who was shot first, seeking to help cover burial expenses, hasn't been as successful. And over the last 4 days, they've raised $875. So, you know, if you're feeling like helping the family out, the Bynum family, they could use a little bit of help there, too. I know that for Hadley, you know, the young woman who was shot, of course, she's still alive. I think people get probably more excited about helping someone who may still be alive and recovering rather than, you know, trying to help burial expenses. But it still could be hurting the family, all right, just to keep that in mind. 17 after 6, 770-5633, if you wanted to join in here at KMED. Oregonian. Reporting this morning, Oregon House Republican leader citing endless drama with his party as reason for departure. This is House Republican leader Jeff Heltrich. And he's stepping down as caucus leader this week. This was a letter he sent to the caucus folks yesterday. And Heltrich, serving as caucus leader since September 2023, said in the press release that the recent death of his father had prompted him to reevaluate his priorities and make the decision to resign. Okay. Let me translate what's really going on. All right, I'm going to step down rather than wait for Christine Drazen to be voted back in by the rhinos in the Republican caucus, okay? That's what's going to be happening. Christine Drazen thinks that being the Republican leader is her job, that was hers. She gave it up when she ran for governor unsuccessfully. You know that story. And so she's been measuring the drapes, the room for the drapes and things ever since she got back in. All right. So that's really what it comes into. I would really like to see a different Republican leader in the House. I'd love to see Junkyard Dog Dwayne Junker. He's the one that needs to be it. Because the problem is that every time you have a Drazen in there, every time you have a Helfrich in there, you have these, shall I say, Northern Oregonians. From the northern part of the state, you get those Republicans from the northern part of the state, the ones that like to wear that really popular camp cologne in Salem, the Eau de Rhino. You know, they splash it on and, you know, Eau de Rhino, you put on the Eau de Rhino and then you're going around trying to figure out how can you get tranny surgeries passed for the Democrats and sell it to the Republicans, you know, that kind of thing. Well, you know, our job is to sit here and help the Democrats pass bad bills. And Dwayne would just snarl like a junkyard dog. Get out of here. Yeah, and for that reason, Dwayne probably wouldn't be the House Republican leader. But a fella can dream, can't he? I mean, I can dream a little bit, right? Wouldn't that be all right? Sure. Sure. All right. So we go from junkyard dogs to two dogs, and then I'll take your calls too. 770-5633. This is the Bill Meyer Show.
The new line of Horizon trailers have arrived at Two Dogs Fabricator.
And I'm on KMED.
22 minutes after 6. Yeah, inflation ticking up to 2.6%. I haven't checked the price of gold, but, you know, I'm not looking at gold as a, you know, something that I'm trading all the time. I'm just looking at it as protection against the inflation play. Although the market is still going up, the stock market, the Trump rally is still going up. But one way or the other, it's my opinion that the long-term for the United States finances is a bit of a challenge, So if you want to have some just-in-case stuff outside of the stock market that is about protecting wealth, it's not about generating returns. You know, you don't buy gold and silver because you're, you know, it's boring, right? It's very boring, very safe. That's the whole idea of that in a very unboring and unsafe world. Sometimes boring is good. Talk to Jay Austin and Company, gold and silver buyers in Ashland at 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland and 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. One of my oldest sponsors, good people. And just drop in there and see if gold and silver is right for you. If you're looking at the current prices saying, hey, I'm going to liquidate a little bit and free up some expenses, pay off some debt. Hey, either way, they will help you do this. We've been doing it a long time. JayAustinBrokers.com, FortuneReserve.com. Protect some wealth. Physical gold and silver. Good time to do that. Dollar cost average it, maybe a little bit each month if you're thinking about doing that too. All right? All right. Now, when I say this, it's not that I wouldn't want President Trump and the Department of Efficiency Department that they're forming in Washington, D.C. to do this. It's just that there are so many headwinds going on to try to take on $30-something trillion dollars in debt when you have a whole lot of people that are saying, keep my benefits flowing. And there's bipartisan support for keeping benefits flowing. Which is why I just laugh every time I would hear someone say, that President Trump is going to take my Social Security. No one's going to be taking your Social Security. He may not be raising it as much as we might like. I was talking about the inflation deal a little bit earlier. But there's a reason why they call it the third rail. There's a reason why they call it the third rail. But the challenge is, though, that makes the dollar, makes it a tough thing for getting the budget under control. For any time in the near future, unless a magical pot of gold opens up during the Trump administration, and maybe it will. Hey, I mean, you just never know. He could pull a rabbit out of the hat, and I hope that the Don certainly does. Meanwhile, he is just filling the cabinet, just continuing to do it great. Yesterday, Elon Musk, of course, he adds that, and former Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy, Department of Government Efficiency. Now, I've had several people write me about this. One of them who writes a lot. I'd love to meet Hans Albuquerque someday. I think he's one of our Texas listeners. Hans Albuquerque writes to me this morning, Bill, isn't it weird that TV, Trump Vance, have to create the Department of Government Efficiency in order to supposedly reduce government? How big will this new DGE be? Employees, budget, office space in D.C., benefits, while the intent is good, the application is ripe for rot. You know, Hans, that would be pretty easy to kind of go down that road. Well, the way it has been described to me, at least as I'm looking at the press coverage of the Department of Governmental Efficiency, Government Efficiency, it's not really an official agency within the government. So it's not about hiring a bunch more people and putting them on government pensions. It's sort of unofficial. It's something that doesn't have to be confirmed by Congress. And it almost seems to be more of an advisory position. Now, Vivek, of course, may have a little more time on his hands, but let's be honest. I don't think Elon Musk has time to sit in the White House and focus on this kind of stuff. This is going to be a little side hustle for Elon. And they're not really being real specific about it. The whole idea, slashing excess regulations and cutting wasteful expenditures. So this may be more of a, here's where we see are the ripe pigs that need to be slaughtered kind of approach to government. That may be what's going on, Hans. I don't know. Like I said, this is a bit of a moving target this morning, okay? All right. Now, the surprising pick over the last 24 hours has been Fox News host Pete Hegseth as Secretary of Defense. He's been selected to be Secretary of Defense. And he said, I am honored to announce that I have nominated Pete Hegseth to serve in my cabinet as the Secretary of Defense. Pete has spent his entire life as a warrior for the troops and for the country. Pete is tough, smart, and a true believer in America. That's a statement that that the president made yesterday. Pete, of course, has a pretty darn good military record, a couple of commendations and things, and served honorably. He's young, 44. It is not a typical swamp pick. Not a typical swamp pick, but that may be a good thing. I noticed that you know, when I see the Democrats being really happy about a pick, I usually get a little bit concerned. And I know Democrats were real happy about Little Marco being Secretary of State. Of course, you know what's going to happen 4 years from now. It's going to be Little Marco running against J.D. Vance to get control of the Trump tiller, you know, after he ends up leaving office. You know what that's going to be all about. But when you have the Democrats that are all excited about voting for Marco Rubio, that always gets me just a little bit suspicious, but I will set my concerns aside right now. But Pete Hegseth, yeah, that one's out of left field, isn't it? Yeah, I didn't see that one coming. You think that might be ultimately a good thing? He certainly cares about the troops. He doesn't have any experience with that snake pit of corruption known as Pentagon contracting, but he's written a lot about that, and he's paid attention to those kind of stories. And maybe this is an inspired pick. I'm going to set aside any cynicism on Pete, because from all accounts, he's a good guy. I talked to him a couple of years ago about a book he had out at that time, maybe in a little bit more. I don't know. It seems like a really smart, Harvard-educated guy, very well-educated. And I'm hoping the best, and maybe it's going to take an outsider not steeped in swampiness, not looking for, I'll be Secretary of Defense for a little while, and then I'm going to go to work for General Dynamics and or take over Boeing or do something else. Because that's been traditionally what has gone on with a lot of the Secretary of Defenses. It could be a good move, wouldn't you think? I'll be talking about that off and on this morning, too. 770-563-3770-KMED. This is the Bill Myers Show. Let me grab a quick call here before news. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Well, this is not so crazy.
Hey, Gene, what's gone?
I just swallowed my pills, but I got them swallowed.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. We must remain heavily medicated in this United States world.
Do.
Okay.
But don't worry, I'll follow your orders.
Okay.
But I was just calling to say the main story behind this Sumerian text. I talk about that all the time.
Okay. The what now?
The fact that the lizard gods came here for the gold.
The what?
They came here to take the gold.
Okay. All right. Now, I'm going to have to start calling you Crazy Gene again if you keep this up. All right. You used to be not so crazy. You started smoothing out there for a little while. You might be getting off your meds again. Okay.
I do got dip weird things happening with my head. You'll just have to put up with it for the time being.
Okay. So you're saying that the aliens are here to get the gold?
They come here for the gold.
Uh-huh.
That's the main reason why they came.
All right. Well, I'm going to run that crazy theory by L.A. Marzulli. He's going to join me at 8:10. Okay?
Oh, really? Oh, that'd be fine.
Oh, yeah. All right. So I imagine hopefully your medication kicks in, and don't call during the interview. Okay?
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. I don't want you to waste your time. I'm not going to pick you up then. Okay?
Okay. Well, that's mean.
All right, Gene. You see, every now and then, I knew it was a mistake. I'm just having fun with you, Gene, all right? It's 6:31. But yeah, L.A. Marzulli will be joining me at 8:10 this morning. We were supposed to talk to him at this time yesterday, but there was a scheduling conflict. In other words, you say 9:35 Eastern, someone thinks it's 9:35 Pacific, and that's what ended up happening. So we'll have him back on because, oddly enough, today they are going to be having that big UFO, they call them UAP now, big hearing in Congress in which they get the latest out there. And, the whole thing with the government now openly talking about it and releasing all this information about, well, here's all the UFOs that we've kept away from you for all these years, and now they're going to talk about it. I'm always a little bit suspicious when the government starts getting behind the talk about here's what's going on, because it is will it perhaps be the next maybe it's not a false flag though, but the next false flag to put ever more trillions of dollars into that yawning, that big maw of the military-industrial complex. I could be completely off base with this. L.A. Marzulli tends to look at it from a biblical and spiritual battle point of view, which is why I think his book is so thought-provoking. But we'll talk with him here about an hour and a half, okay? Meanwhile, Eric Peters joining me, hitting the open road. Wheels Up Wednesday kicks off after news next.
Rev up your engines, folks. American Wrencher Garage is putting on the brakes this season, ending the high cost of vehicle repairs.
Got a mess with the IRS or a tax date with the state? You may need representation. Visit FirstResponseIRS.com. First Response Resolution, your local tax resolution experts in Eagle Point, defending your rights as a taxpayer. Visit FirstResponseIRS.com.
Good morning. This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
6:37, Eric Peters rejoins the program here. Automotive journalist genius at EP Autos for Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric, how you doing?
I'm good. Has Cher left yet?
No, I don't think Bono has killed himself in that cliff driving accident yet either that he talked about doing. I don't think anybody's left, really.
No, nope. They always talk and they never act. I hope that doesn't prove to be the same case with Trump, though.
Yeah. Well, we have the situation. What was another one I read about, too? Tom Hanks, right? Tom Hanks saying, yep. No, come on, Mr. America. Come on, Tom. Guys, he must be going. He's taking that Castaway acting to heart there. Well said! You know, getting ready to, you know, float himself out into the water or something like that. I don't get that.
I really miss the days when, per Elvis, I'm just an entertainer,
yep.
You know, and they just did their thing, and we admired their talent because they could sing or they could act, and that's it.
Yep. Elections have consequences. You've been writing a lot about this here, and I know that the Orange Man is filling up his cabinet, and some of the picks, I think, are different, and I think are interesting, like Pete Hegseth. Have you looked into that? I haven't
yet extensively. I read about that this morning, but the one that I am happy about is that Redguard Reagan is out and Lee Zeldin is in. And while by no means a libertarian, he's infinitely preferable to a communist.
What could be happening here with changes going on at the EPA? What do you think?
Well, potentially there could be a wholesale reexamination of this push to force everything off the market that isn't a battery-powered device. Now, I think it'll be very interesting to see whether Trump, given that Elon is his new best friend, allows Lee Zeldin to do that, you know, specifically to rescind some of the subsidies as well as some of the mandates, at least at the federal level.
And what has concerned me about Elon, even though I like Elon in many ways, and he's a brilliant guy, Elon has made his money by cozying up to power one way or the other. We have to remember that. We always have to keep that in mind. He got to be this billionaire by essentially making other car companies pay him to make money losing cars. All right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What I'd really like to see generally is a challenge to this insolence of the regulatory state simply issuing these edicts, these regulations that have the force and effect of law. I think it would be great if we got back to Congress, which is the legislative body, passing laws and that are subject to scrutiny and accountability. You can't fire EPA bureaucrats, though maybe Trump will try. Minimally, I would like to see further proposed regulations be subjected to cost-benefit analysis. The real deal, you know, that they would actually have to demonstrate a tangible benefit, not some abstract thing. Oh, it's good for the environment. Well, how specifically? What's it going to do? And how much is it going to cost? And then let's decide whether it's worth doing.
You had a rant on EP Autos, a video one. You were out on the road, and I was watching it yesterday morning after it got off the air. And you were talking about how the EPA has taken this, we're going to protect you to such an extreme in which we have, essentially, a million angels dancing on the head of a pin as far as, pollution control sort of situation in which they say, we're going to reduce emissions by, 20 or 30%. You use something like that. How does that math fraud work in the EPA right now in the environmentalist world?
Well, let me preface it by first saying that they have grossly exaggerated the threat. And an easy way to understand this is to go back to what we dealt with, the quote-unquote pandemic, when they made it seem as though if you took a breath outside without wearing a mask, you were going to die horribly of a disease.
Right.
Which, of course, wasn't true. You know, the threat was greatly less than that. And it is the same with regard to at least vehicle exhaust emissions. The majority of the heavy lifting has been done for decades. In 1975, catalytic converters became ubiquitous. And in the mid-late 80s, electronic fuel injection, in which the air-fuel ratio was maintained optimally, became a standard thing across the spectrum. And that got rid of about 90% of the uncontrolled harmful emissions that vehicles produce. And since then, it's been incremental gains at ever greater cost. But they try to disingenuously tell people, well, the new regulation that we're about to propose is going to reduce emissions by 20%, which sounds like a big number. I'm just pulling that out of a hat.
Right.
But what they really mean is 20% of less than 1%. So it's a fractional gain. They never explain that to people. So what's the point of that meaningfully? What does that do in terms of benefiting the environment, so-called? You know, and now they're going after carbon dioxide, which they've reframed as a pollutant.
And you see, that was the big – see, that's the biggest fraud that I think has come out of the EPA for years, because – carbon dioxide is a naturally occurring gas. It's a part of life on a carbon-based life form planet. You have oxygen, and you have the process of life turning into carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is issued by the living things. The living trees take it in and build themselves. It was plant food for them, and then they give us oxygen. It's just this ridiculous kabuki theater. And when is someone going to actually say, carbon dioxide is not pollution?
Well, that's what I'm hoping is going to happen. That it will be explained to people that it was despicable to frame this beneficial gas that is necessary for life, without which we would all die, first of not having oxygen and then second of not having food if it weren't out there. And it's certainly not a pollutant. You know, people hear that word and they immediately begin to think of things like smog and having difficulty breathing. And whatever you think about carbon dioxide, it has nothing to do with either of those issues.
Yeah, and you think about the difference in, if you're behind a car or vehicle in traffic right now, and they're in front of you, and you have your window or your vent on or anything else, it's not like it was back when we were kids, Eric. You remember that? You remember what it was like sitting behind the carbureted cars of the 1960s and 70s?
Sure, I've got one in my garage.
I know. We love them.
The take-home point is it hasn't been like that since the 90s, and that was 30 years ago.
That's what I was getting at here.
Yep.
And I remember what it was like. You know, you'd be behind a classic car, and you'd always have the smell of unburned gasoline. Some raw fuel was always part of that. And that's what gave us, the noxious smog and the nitrogen oxide smogs in Los Angeles. That's gone for the most part. It's been cleaned
absolutely
up years ago, decades ago, actually.
Yep. And I hope that Trump or Zeldin make an effort to explain that to people. And the other thing that I would very much like to see is Trump or whoever is the responsible person getting rid of these restrictions, these barriers that prevent, for example, a manufacturer like Toyota from importing into this country models like that $13,000 Hilux Champ that you and I have talked about in the past, affordable vehicles, and explain to people that it's not that they're not safe vehicles, it's just that they're not compliant with every jot and tittle of the Federal Register, and that's not the same thing as unsafe.
That would be making America free again. And America hasn't been free for a long time in its ability for consumers to buy what they wish to buy rather than what some EPA or National Traffic Safety Administration apparatchik wishes us to be able to buy.
Yeah, and wouldn't it be a boon for hard-pressed Americans who are paying $100 for two plastic bags of groceries to be able to buy themselves a brand new $13,000 or $14,000 pickup instead of one that costs $40,000 or $50,000?
It'd be outstanding. I mean, people would just go nuts for something like that. And and then you'd have newer vehicles with all the pollution controls in it rather than someone trying to keep their 1974 Ford F-150 going, which is nothing wrong with doing that either. But you get the point.
Right. It would actually be good for the environment. You know, you can turn this stuff around on them because they're frauds. You know, just like Cher promising to leave the country, but she never does.
Okay. Or people that leave the country or they say, I'm going to leave the country. And then you find out they have a house in Australia where they do most of their living. You know, leaving the country. Yeah, you already have another country, you bozo. But anyway, Eric Peters, epautos.com. If you have a question or a comment for Eric on what we're talking about this morning, maybe even a question about a vehicle, get in touch here. Join in at 770-5633, 770-KMED. Tell you what, we'll go down some other rabbit holes you've been talking about on epautos.com. Be right back. This is the Bill Meyer Show.
Lose your car key or remote.
That's 770-KMED.
Yeah, belly up to the Country Talk Bar or the Rock Talk Bar, whatever the case might be. Eric Peters is with me, epautos.com, and we have Deplorable Patrick. Patrick, you wanted to talk about fuel injection a bit here with Eric. You're on. Go ahead.
Hey, Bill and Eric, good morning. When I was a kid in auto shop, and ever since, I've worked on a lot of carburetors, and I remember quite the new light came on when people started to explain that carburetors, you adjust them the best you can, and then you try to get a good average. A lot of the time, they're too lean, A lot of the time they're too rich, so you're kind of compromising. But the fuel injection adjusts for conditions all the time to keep the optimum fuel-air mixture so that it runs without a lot of extra fumes like you just now talked about. But you also talked about, I don't know what year Cadillac it is, Eric, you got there, but let's just say you've got some big comfortable Buick or Cadillac. You can buy aftermarket fuel injection and bolt onto those babies, and people ought to consider that. It's not unreasonable.
No, absolutely. And, in fact, they're pretty much universal, and they have their self-learning program, and it's simply a matter of physically bolting it on, and they typically will bolt onto the existing intake manifold, so it's not elaborate. You just remove the carburetor, put the throttle body fuel injection system onto the manifold, and then you start the thing up, and it learns, and it figures out what the engine needs. It self-adjusts, and that's it. And, you know, these computers aren't evil because they don't control the car. They just control the air-fuel ratio.
Yeah, pretty good stuff. Good point there, and thanks for making it, Deplorable Patrick. And are these available for practically any classic vehicle that you wanted to?
Oh, anything at all. Absolutely.
Really?
They're modular. You know, you can get them in the equivalent of, say, a 2-barrel or a 4-barrel in terms of how much air and fuel they're capable of flowing. There are a number of manufacturers that make them. If you go to a catalog such as Summits or Jags, and there's a bunch of others, you can, you know, have a look and see and figure out which one you need for your particular vehicle.
I don't want to go off into the weeds on this particular topic, but I'm kind of fascinated. I've heard that they can do it. Do you have to put in an oxygen sensor like all the modern cars have to be able to measure the reading, or are there other ways to do that?
Yeah, you know, offhand, I'm not sure. And even if you do, that's not a big deal, really. You know,
okay.
All you have to do is you know, cut a hole in one of the exhaust pipes and thread it and put the sensor in, and then there's a wire that runs from that back up to the system. If you have to do that, offhand, I don't know. I haven't looked into those things in a while because, you know, me, I'm kind of a carburetor guy, and I like the old mechanical systems.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said, especially when it comes to the motorcycle world, which you're really big into, okay?
Yep.
Eric Peters with me, epautos.com. We're talking transportation, a little bit of politics in there, too. Hi, good morning. You're with Eric. And who's this? Good morning.
Greg.
Hi.
Oh. Yeah, about a month and a half ago, you were talking about station wagons, what happened to them.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And back in the day, me and my buddies, we hunted all the time. We all had station wagons because you could put the tailgate down, lift the upper hatch, gave you an extra foot and a half. You could sleep two back there.
Yeah.
So they decided to do away with the tailgates on the station wagons, the wing windows where you don't have to roll the window all the way down. If the wind's blowing, it blows the rain in on you. Oh, and roll-up windows. Renault was going to come out with a car. They wouldn't let him come out with it because it had roll-up windows.
I don't remember that, but that's an interesting take. But was that one of the reasons, Eric, that the station wagons went away, or was it just more about styling, I think, at the time?
Well,
I appreciate
it was chiefly about cafe, because those wagons, were, for the most part, were built on the same platforms as the big rear-wheel drive, body-on-frame V8-powered sedans that once ruled America's roads that were forced off the market by, once again, our friends at the EPA via CAFE and the fuel economy regs. That's what forced the cars to be downsized to the point where even a so-called full-size car today, something like a BMW 7, would have been considered mid-size back in the 70s.
Ah, okay.
And if you reverse that, if you look at, for example, a mid-70s Chevy Nova, that was considered a compact back then. It would be close to a full-size car today, if you can believe it.
No kidding. I know that.
Now, by the way, I wanted to mention something before I forget.
Sure. You know,
this week's car review is of the 2025 Chevy Silverado pickup.
Right.
And it does have the not only the fold-down tailgate, but a multi-piece tailgate. And it effectively has become what the wagon was. You know, and these big cars, the reason these trucks are so popular is not because there's so many contractors out there hauling around pallets of bricks. They have become the big family vehicle of choice for Americans who can afford them anyway, who can no longer get big American sedans anymore.
Why don't you break down that review since you brought it up? Let's just go into that. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Well, you know, GM, there's a lot of ground for criticizing GM. You and I have gone over that. But this is really a nice and refreshing break from the woke. Among other things, you can still get not just one, but two V8s in this thing. Mm-hmm. It does not have any form of hybrid or electrical drivetrain in it. And now, this is really weird, and people who know trucks are going to be maybe a little bit surprised by this, but it and the Ford F-150 are the only half-ton trucks that you can still get in the traditional regular cab, extended cab, and crew cab configurations, and with either a 5 or a 6 or an 8 foot bed. Believe it or not, those things are rapidly disappearing from the half ton truck market.
Are you talking about long beds are disappearing from that?
Yeah, 8 foot, you know, 8 foot beds are disappearing. A lot of trucks do not offer that. You can only get the crew cab or the super cab, and then you get a 6 foot bed in a full size truck, which of course makes it not much more useful than my 2002 Nissan Frontier, which is a compact size truck with a 6 foot bed.
Is this about weight and cafe standards or something else going on? It just seems weird to sell pickup trucks that are not able to take something at least 8 feet long. It just blows me away to think of a full size truck that way.
It's because of what we were just talking about. There are a lot of people who don't buy these trucks to use them for work. They buy them as family vehicles, and it's great to have that bed. You know, you can go down to Lowe's and mm-hmm. you can pick up some bags of mulch, and you know, you can carry a dirt bike back there. But they're not the kinds of people who generally are going to be hauling 4x8 sheets of plywood.
Okay. So, overall impression of the Chevy Silverado besides the bed. What about, and I just want to make sure, no CVTs, right?
No, conventional 8 and 10 speed automatics. And the other thing I ought to mention, which is kind of strange.
Now, wait a minute. What do you mean conventional 8 and 10 speed automatics? When did that become conventional? I guess over the last few years,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I mean, yeah. You know, I'm future shocked because, yeah, we've come to accept that, but at least it's not a CVT. And these transmissions have multiple overdrive gears. And the reason for that, again, our friends in the EPA, you know, they put more gears and more specifically more overdrive gears into these transmissions because they can eke out a tiny fractional increase in gas mileage. Of course, now the transmission costs $4,000 if it ever fails.
Probably more than that, really, in real life. As far as the engine reliability, what would you say about the GM V8 in the Chevy?
Well, the GM V8 is an excellent engine. It's been around a long time, and it's a pushrod design. And for those who aren't familiar, that means it's not an overhead cam design. So it's simpler, it has fewer parts, and it's essentially the same engine that they use in the current Corvette. And it's a pretty reliable engine, and there's more room under the hood to work on it, which is nice. I wanted to mention, too, before I forget, because it's kind of interesting, the standard engine in this truck is a four-cylinder, if you can imagine that.
Boy, four-cylinder would seem to be underpowered for something that meaty, but it's just me.
Well, it isn't. You know, 2.7 liters, and of course it's turbocharged, and it makes more than 300 horsepower, and something like, gosh, I wouldn't remember the figure, but something like 340 or 350 foot-pounds of torque, which is comparable to what most V8s and trucks made in the mid-late 1990s. So power isn't the issue. Now, I myself would be a little bit concerned about the load that little engine is under and how well it's going to hold up over, say, 10 or 15 years.
And this is what we've been talking about a lot, the move to the four-cylinder. Nothing wrong with four-cylinders. I have a four-cylinder in both vehicles that I own. Actually, all three that I have are four-cylinders, but only one of them is turbocharged.
Yep.
And yeah, I understand they're kind of dogs. I don't worry about being a speed demon in a PT Cruiser, for crying out loud. It's a cruiser around town. You know, you get what you get, that sort of thing. But the idea that we're going to take large, heavy vehicles and put immensely turbocharged tiny engines into them is a bit of a concern for longevity. And the mechanics are reporting a lot on YouTube that longevity, engine life longevity, is a thing with these four cylinders that are being
Ubered. Well, sure, it's a reason. It's an incongruity. You know, it used to be a given that if you got a half-ton truck, the minimum you would get is a six-cylinder engine.
Right.
There was usually always a V8 available for people who needed to tow and pull and so on. And smaller trucks like my O2 Frontier, it's appropriate to have a four-cylinder engine in that thing. It's not a hot rod, but it's plenty adequate for a little truck. You know, and the thing has... Hell, heck, it's almost 24 years old now, and it's still fine. Now, I don't know whether a half-ton truck with a four-cylinder engine is going to be fine in 24 years from now.
I know that if I were getting the Silverado, I'd probably get the larger engine. I think it'd just be wiser in the long run, okay?
Absolutely.
Overall, though, pretty good impression? Great vehicle?
Oh, very good impression. You know, the only daunting thing about it, and this is a general criticism, is that they're so expensive. Even the base work truck trim is about $42,000 with four-wheel drive. Now, granted, it comes with air conditioning, it comes with power windows, locks, cruise control, and a decent stereo and all of that. And, you know, by the standards of, say, the 90s, that would have been considered a loaded truck. But the point is, you can't buy one that's decontented, that doesn't have all those features, that's considerably less expensive. A buddy of mine, when he got out of college, when we got out of college, the first thing he did, this is like the late 80s, was to buy a brand new base trim F-150 because he wanted to start a roofing business. And I remember it very well. And he spent about $7,500 brand new on that truck.
Boy, that day's long gone at the moment.
Yep.
Huh? Mm. Eric Peters, epautos.com. Taking your calls. Let's do it. 658 at KMED, 99.3 KBXG. Line 2, you're on with Eric. Who's this?
Hey, good morning. This is Scott.
Scott.
Hello, Eric. Want to circle back to the fuel injection, the aftermarket fuel injection. I've got one on an 83 S10 pickup. I put a 96 4.3 V6 roller motor in it. Mm-hmm. The only two or three issues I've got, this is actually from Fast EFI. You do have to weld a bung into the exhaust pipe, which they come with it.
Is that for the oxygen sensor?
For the O2 sensor,
yeah,
correct.
Okay.
Yeah, you also have to have an electric fuel pump because the mechanical fuel pump won't put enough pressure for it. And then the other issue I had is after about 6 months of driving it, it would randomly die. I mean, if I started, it would die. If I would stop, it would die. If I turn right, it would turn left. It didn't, it just randomly. I finally came to the conclusion that I have a wiring issue, being it's an 83 S10 pickup, and occasionally it just shorts the system out and dies. And as long as I'm moving, it'll fire right back up. But
huh. Yep,
that's really, oh, and then it doesn't make the sound of the four barrel when you step on the gas. But,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that, yeah, yeah. You don't have great. The moan, right? You don't have the moan. As a,
yeah, you don't have that big, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everything's got its pros and cons. You know, I think the main pro of this fuel injection system is that you don't have to fiddle with it fairly often. You know, assuming it works and you don't have an electrical glitch, it'll just keep working in seamlessly for a long time. Whereas with carburetors, you know, you regularly have to fiddle with the choke. You got to do this, you got to do that, which isn't a big deal if you like it. You know, so it really comes down to what your personal preferences are.
Been a long time since I had to start a vehicle with a choke. Remember, you'd have to depress it once all the way to the floor and then let up, right? And then
it depends on the model, yeah. You know, and some you had to pump once or twice.
Yeah.
You know, with mine, I have to turn the key a little bit, or I have to crank the engine a little bit because my quadra jet, if it sits for a long time, the fuel bowls are a little leaky. So you got to crank the engine to fill up the fuel bowls before it'll fire.
Yeah, and the other thing, after it would start, then you'd have to brap the accelerator, and then the idle would kick down a little bit, right?
Yes.
You'd have the fast idle. All those things that we all used to have to deal with and no longer, okay? Line 3, you're on with Eric Peters, epautos.com. Hi, who's this?
Good morning, gentlemen. Jeff and Selma.
Hello, Jeff. What's up?
Hey, I was in an estate sale 3 weeks ago, and I just nabbed two 1967 Cadillac DeVilles.
Oh, right.
One's a convertible. It's been sitting in the barn since 1991.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
What kind of shape are they in?
The coupe has been sitting outside since 83, so it's got all the parts I need for the convertible.
Mm. Well, that's good. Yeah, two for one, yeah.
Yeah, but the you know, when I open the trunk on that thing, then I got a 5-foot bed.
You're just about to. You know, you're right when you think about those old caddies. I had a 69 when I was a kid in high school for a while. Oh, my gosh.
Just a Chevy Caprice from the same era.
Hold on just a second here, Jeff. What were you saying, Eric? All right.
Oh, you know, and even something that was mass market from back in the day, like a Chevy Caprice, let's say, or a comparable Plymouth. He's right. You know, they had these enormous trunks. You look at today's quote unquote full size cars, and they have a trunk that's about the same size as what you'd get in something like a Camry. You know, little. It's not enough. You know, it's useless as a family type vehicle. So again, this is why family people are buying these big pickups. Because you got all the space that you used to be able to get in a big American sedan or wagon.
Now, back to Jeff, you and your 1967 Cadillacs that you got there. You know, we know where the bodies will be buried in Selma when you get that back on the road, okay?
Remember the opening scene of Goodfellas?
Yeah.
You know, for people who don't know about this, watch the opening scene of Goodfellas to understand what he's talking about.
I love it.
I haven't been able to get the trunks open on them yet.
Okay. Well, there may be bodies in it already. Better check.
Skeletons anyway.
All right. Thanks for the call, Jeff. Great hearing from you in Selma. I can't wait. Send me a picture of those vehicles. I'd love to see a 67 Cadillac. Great. I think that was that the last year. No, they still had a couple more years of the headlights stacked up and down. I think it was the 69 that they went side by side, didn't they, Eric?
I think so. Didn't they still use the 472 in that year before they went up to the 8-liter?
Let's see. The 472 was in the 69. I think that one was like a 429 or something else. It was the slightly smaller in 67. And then in the Eldorado, in the 69s, 1970, they had a 500 cubic inch for that couple of years. And boy, those were pigs. Well, they were all pigs.
By the way, here's a piece of useless random knowledge that may come in handy sometime. In a car like that, if you lock yourself out of the trunk and you don't have a key, all you have to do is take out the rear seat back from inside the car, mm-hmm. and you'll have access to the trunk, and you can get a screwdriver or a crowbar that's long enough, and you stick it into the lock, because you'll be able to get to the guts of the lock from that side and rotate it and pop the trunk. Don't ask me how I know that.
Okay. Well, we'll just leave that alone. Hi. Good morning, caller. You're on with Eric. Who's this? Welcome. Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Bill?
Yes.
This is Rick from Medford.
Rick.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Looking at Yahoo this morning, and there's a headline in here, RV sales to halt in California.
Yes.
Due to a new climate rules regulation, and apparently they want to halt the sale of diesel motorhomes.
Well, they've done it, and they've actually done something even worse. As I understand that law, they're going to require people who come through the state. So if you'd have your RV and you want to drive through that state, you have to have an up-to-date carbon certification, whatever that means.
Really?
Yes, really.
Isn't this something that should be challenged legally? Because this is almost like, up until this point, traveling the 50 states was pretty much you just traveled. This is almost like an admissions document of some sort, Eric, isn't it?
Well, it's also, as I read it, a violation of the Interstate Commerce Clause. And that goes for the whole California Air Resources Board decreeing its own California-specific mandates that basically everybody else ends up having to follow, too.
Yeah, especially who is visiting. Hey, I appreciate you telling me that. I didn't know that story. And so you got it in Yahoo this morning, sir?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Which is hard to believe anything in Yahoo, but...
Occasionally there must be some journalism there, all right? Okay.
Yeah.
Bill, I'm planning on writing about this, so I just haven't had a chance yet to get to it.
All right. Well, I appreciate the call and appreciate all the calls and all the wonderful questions that end up getting done here. So you had the Silverado, rather. And what do you think we'll be reviewing for next week? I'm looking forward to it.
Well, let's see. Tomorrow the Silverado goes back, and they're bringing me the Subaru Forester, the 25, which looks pretty much like the 24, but they've made a number of little but significant updates to it, including increasing the power and low-end torque of the engine, and as well as some other things which we can get into then.
Is it the same boxer engine they've been using for years? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not a 6, unfortunately. It's still, that's off the market, but their Boxer 4 is still a fine engine.
All right, very good. We'll talk with you about it then. Thanks. All right.
Sounds good.